Okay, thanks for the invitation. I'm going to be telling you about a couple of papers summer, early fall with Finn Larson. So the general background is that over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of progress in understanding black hole entropy microscopically, macroscopically, with improved accuracy going beyond the leading order computations. So in particular, both on the microscopic and macroscopic sides, we can derive corrections to the Bekenstein-Hawking area law, various power law corrections in the charges against a black hole. And this has been a very active subject. Many people have worked on this. This is an incomplete list. And there are also interesting results, even in the case where these corrections are actually not small corrections, but large corrections, in the sense that if the area of the original black hole is zero, so the Bekenstein-Hawking formula would be zero. Nevertheless, we know there's a microscopic degeneracy, and by including these extra corrections, we can account for these things. So this is crucially using various stringy effects, alpha prime corrections, G string effects, and it's certainly very encouraging that we can begin to understand those effects quantitatively, in the sense that most of us probably believe that a resolution of the black hole information paradox will involve inherently stringy effects, and so it's crucial to have those under control, and that's being developed in this work. Now, there's also an interesting connection to the topological string via this conjecture of Aguri, Strominger, and Boffa. I'll say a little bit about that as we go along. So there are these nice agreements, but when you first see these things, they're rather mysterious. In particular, one takes into account a certain set of higher derivative terms in the supergravity action and matches those to the microscopic degeneracies. But these higher derivative terms are not being included in a systematic way. It's a very particular subclass of higher derivative terms that are being included. Nevertheless, one seems to get agreement, and the question is why? In particular, if one looks at one of the terms that one doesn't include and looks at its contribution to the entropy, it would seem to contribute to the same order one is working at, and so screw up the agreement. Okay, so sometimes one arguments for this based on supersymmetry or maybe one index or something like that. I'd like to argue that the reason things are working is basically due to exact statements we can make about anomalies. Particular gravitational anomalies will play a key role. And I'm also going to use the fact that there's an underlying ADS-3 geometries in these black holes that have been considered. Okay, so once I give this anomaly-based derivation, this will both lead to a streamlined derivation of these corrections and allow us to generalize them in the sense that we can compute these corrections even for non-BTS black holes. And so a particular example will be the heterotic string, so the entropy of the heterotic string with both left movers and right movers excited, so therefore a non-BTS system that will follow from these anomaly-based arguments. Four-dimensional black holes, that's right. There's a near-horizon ADS-3, that's right. Okay, so here's a little overview of the rest of the talk. I'll sort of spiral in on the main results. I'm going to begin with some general comments on comparisons between microscopic entropies and macroscopic entropies. Then I'll turn to discussion of black hole entropy from the microscopic side and some general higher derivative theory, not necessarily coming from string theory or supersymmetry, just some general comments we can make. Then we'll apply these ideas to string theory and use gravitational anomalies. I'll give some concrete examples. And at the end, discuss some more general aspects of holography in the presence of gravitational anomalies. Okay, so most of this talk is going to be about the macroscopic side, about computing the black hole entropy, but I'd like to begin with discussion of the microscopic counting, some general features. So the usual situation that we're all used to is we consider some bound state, BPS bound state of brains of some sort, and we'd like to know the degeneracy of that system. And typically what we do is we can work at in the low-energy world volume CFT description. So we want to do some counting of world volume CFT. And so when we do that, it's crucial to distinguish two kinds of charges that are carried by this BPS system of brains. So there are things that are called the heavy charges, P, that define what the CFT is. So for example, the D1-D5P system, the D1-D5 tell you what the CFT is. And the P, the momentum, would arise in excitation in that CFT. So I'm going to call those things light charges. Heavy charges tell you what the CFT is. Light charges are excitations in that CFT. OK, so given that description, the natural thing you'd like to do is then work out a partition function of your CFT, sum over all states, and we would weight the states by some potential coupled to the light charges. Sum over all states of the system, the degeneracy is a function of the heavy charges and the light charges weighted by this potential. That gives us a partition function. This is the so-called mixed partition function. It was defined by Gori, Strominger, and Vafa, but I want to emphasize here, this is just a natural thing given this distinction between two types of charges.
So,
could be. I'm using P and Q because in the context of four-dimensional black holes, they end up being electric magnetic. But, for example, D1B5P, light charge and momentum, heavy charge in D1B5, so these are not electromagnetic. So it depends on the context. But my notation is sort of designed to agree with some other things in the literature.
Is Q possible?
Is Q positive? Well, yeah, so if we're looking at some, that's right, so the standard thing would be look at some, you know, chiral half of the CFT and look at, you know, positive momentum in that half. That's sort of the standard situation. So it'd be like P left or something. P left starts from, you know, zero.
Omega was
right. Well, this thing is, I mean, this thing is something over all states, so it's non-vanishing. Yeah, this thing here, I'm counting everything. This is counting all states. So I'm not going to just count the BPS states. Oh, we could restrict the BPS states if we want to, but here I'm defining this as completely generally counting over all states. Okay, so this is basically just some general, you know, thermodynamic partition function. Okay, so of course we could try to invert this relation to recover the degeneracy as a function of charges in terms of the partition function. That would be some inverse Laplace transform. Okay, so I don't know if we're going to see what's down here, but hopefully. So as I said, I'm not going to really talk too much about the microscopic side of things, but let me just sort of quote the result that we want to get. So the canonical example here will be M5 rings wrapped on Calabi-Yau. There's some low energy 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT associated with that. And that CFT is governed by the P's are the wrapping numbers of M5 rings. The potentials phi I are potentials for M2 rings. And phi 0 is this potential dual to momentum. So you wrap the 5 ring, you get a string, you have momentum moving on that string. Phi 0 is potential dual to the string. So if you want to account for these corrections of this form, this is not the whole story. There are exponentially small corrections in entropy as well. But if you want to account for that part of the entropy, it suffices to look at this contribution to the partition function. Okay, so there's extra dot, dot, dots here. But the dot, dot, dots are suppressed when this phi naught becomes very small. And so to get those power law corrections, the question is whether you can reproduce this microscopic partition function from the gravity point of view.
And small,
and P large. That's right.
The effective topological string of like is rounded into a 4 pi r over the phi naught is 0.
Okay, so it's important to notice here that these terms are both scaling like 1 over phi naught. Okay, that's going to be important for what I use. This is going to tell us what parts of the supergravity action we need in order to reproduce this microscopic counting. Okay, now that was the microscopic side. Now let me turn to the macroscopic side, the gravity side, black hole. And so what's nice about phrasing things in terms of that mixed partition function is it aligns us perfectly with what we usually compute in ADS CFT. So it's naturally set up to agree with the bulk computation ADS CFT. So given that, the general class of things I'm going to be considering, geometries, are going to have an ADS 3 factor, some sphere factor, and some compact manifold. In that M5 ring case, wrapped in Calabi-Yau, this would be ADS 3 cross S2 cross CY3. Now, in the subject, most of the papers in the subject deal with ADS2 black holes. And what is the relation between these things? Well, they're the same geometries. But if you have an ABS3 black hole and you collude sequentially reduce it along the horizon direction, it becomes ABS2. So those ABS2 black holes are just the dimensional reduction of ABS3 black holes. And what I'm claiming is the ABS3 picture is actually more powerful. Let's just use the symmetries of a 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. That's right. And the black rings also have an ADS3 structure. Yeah, so ADS3, actually the only case, as far as I know, the only case where we really understand in full quantitative detail black hole entropy and string theory is for black holes with an ADS3 factor. Maybe there's a counterexample, but I'm not aware of it.
Then why is it hard to get the ADS2?
The hard part is getting the dual to the ADS2. The hard part is getting a dual quantum mechanics to ADS2.
Yeah.
But the dual CFT. Why would you want to dimensionally reduce?
Why don't you just dimensionally reduce?
Well, because in ADS3 I know the CFT. In ADS2 I don't know the.
I don't know the.
The horizon. So you have to look at a black hole there, and reduce along the horizon direction. So you have to be a finite size black hole to reduce clearly, and then you'll get the ADS2 picture. And it's pretty straightforward to see that just in explicit geometry. But so the ABS3, so it's an equivalent picture, but the symmetries are more manifest in the ABS3 description. You have the full both of your Soros there.
But maybe the question
is,
why isn't quantum mechanics always
just an entropy reduction
of circle of the CFT?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it isn't. Has this been? So I know Strominger and the company have a proposal for this quantum mechanics, which is some quiver of quantum mechanics. Superficially, that indeed doesn't look like. Well, this is, what can I say? If you don't think, you just take this geometry, write it down, you'll see an ABS3 factor, use ADS-CFT, there's 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT.
So if we take the 5 ring and wrap it around a 4 5 1 kilometer down, so we're compactifying
that geometry is ADS3 plus S2 plus Calabi on your horizon.
So I know in these four-dimensional black holes can be lifted up to five-dimensional black strings, and then it's easier to see it as the near horizon gravitate as a big three factor. But that I've always thought of in the asymptotic flat context, which is circles become finite size in infinity.
Mm-hmm.
If you really stick to the near horizon geometry, the circle that you're including by reducing is very big in ADS3 and large radius.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't cause any complication, you still get ADS2.
Right, I know what you're saying. So the state, well, so you have to change the identifications a bit, okay? So the ADS3 black hole, the question is right whether you reduce on that big circle or reduce on a circle becoming asymptotically null in ADS3. Okay, so in fact, this relation between ADS2 black holes and ADS3 black holes, the geometry is, if you just lift the ADS2, you get a locally ADS3 geometry. The identifications can be a bit different in that local geometry than the standard situation. So you have to change that in order to avoid the problem you're talking about. But that doesn't change the geometry of the horizon. So in terms of the entropy counting, that's really a separate issue. The horizon stays unfixed. I'm doing something off at infinity. Okay, hopefully this will, I'll give examples as we go along, hopefully make this a bit more clear. In any case, when we have this ADS3 factor, then, of course, we have ADS-CFT correspondence, and we'll write down this ADS partition function. In the gravity picture, these heavy charges, P, are the things that set the size of the ADS, they set the size of the sphere, they're setting the geometry, and these potentials, I introduce a potential partition function by adding something to Lagrangian, so by ADS-CFT, we know those potentials are just boundary conditions for some supergravity fields, just applying the ADS-CFT correspondence. So this mixed partition function is just the natural thing you'd compute in ADS-CFT, unusual. So how would I compute this partition function? So I've given you boundary conditions, and I should in principle sum over all geometries with those boundary conditions. Just think about that as summing over all semi-classical geometries, and then performing some path integral of all fluctuations around those geometries. These fluctuations include massive and massless string modes, string, brain, instantons, everything. This is clearly going to be too hard. We can't do this. But in fact, the key thing is that those terms I wanted to reproduce on the microscopic side, all scalings 1 over phi naught, implies when we go through the analysis here that we only need to keep local contributions to the partition function, in the sense that if I just hand you some local supergravity action, including all higher derivative terms, so meaning all integration out of all the massive string modes, that's enough to get the partition function of the Eigens I need. So the extra terms that I'm not including, summing over geometry, summing over instantons, winding around this non-contractible circle, they're higher order. That's the key thing that makes this work. And basically, the key point is that since things are coming from local supergravity action, I can argue that's determined by symmetries and anomalies. Symmetries and anomalies don't necessarily constrain the parts I'm not looking at, the non-local stuff. Okay, so on this topological string side that's gotten a lot of attention, what does that do? Well, the topological string captures some particular subclass of higher derivative terms, basically R squared terms with factors of the graviphoton completed by supersymmetry. And it's known from starting with the work of DeWitt and collaborators and examples since then, and including these terms, working out the corrected geometry, working out the Blackwell entropy, does give agreement with the microscopic counting. Now, as I said, this is, at first hearing, this is very confusing because this does not include terms that we know that are there, such as an R to the fourth term. And you can just say, just take and give an R to the fourth term, look at its contribution to the entropy, you'll find that it corrects things at the same order as you're working at, so it would seem to spoil the agreement. So what is going on? Well, as I just said, what's going on is the local part of the partition function is governed by symmetries and anomalies. The topological string gets those right, okay? So it has the right symmetries, it'll capture the anomaly, the gravitational anomalies, and so it has to give the right answer. So all these extra contributions that are not included have to cancel out by symmetry, okay? So it's like a non-renormalization theorem. Again, this is I think only clear if you use this ADS3 picture, I would claim. Okay, so the analysis, this is just an overview. The analysis I'm going to use is going to use supersymmetry. I can use supersymmetry in the underlying theory, but then I can apply the results to non-supersymmetric black holes in these theories. That'll allow me to apply things to non-BPS systems. Okay, now I'm going to step back a bit and talk about general issues involving computing black hole entropy in a general higher derivative gravity theory with an ADS3 factor. For now, putting aside the connection to string theory or supersymmetry, just trying to be as general as possible and see how far we can go. So I'll focus on cases of an ADS3 factor, some sphere, some contact X. As I said, this is motivated by this canonical example of M-theory on CY3 with M5 brains and M2 brains. And this example is related to interesting cases by duality, heterotic string on T5, D1, D5, and T4 process 1, K3 process 1. Okay, but so I start with some general diffeomorphism invariant theory that admits this background as a solution. Right off the bat, I'm just going to reduce on X, reduce down to a people's three-dimensional action, and write that general action in this form. So some general diffeomorphism invariant bulk Lagrangian of all higher derivatives. We need some boundary terms to make this whole action finite, or the well-defined durational principle, and so on. And there may be some Chern-Simons terms, which I have to sort of put aside and deal with separately for reasons that hopefully have been clear. Okay, so I assume that this action admits a solution of the form ADS3 cross sphere, and that there exists a solution that preserves all the symmetry. So there exists a solution where all diffeomorphism invariant, gauge invariant quantities are constant. So all, phi f squared, things like that, all constant over the solution. This will differ from the black hole, but I'm assuming this exists as a solution. Okay, so I have this Lagrangian, and assuming this is a solution, so I'd like to know how to figure out the radii. What is the size of the ADS? What is the size of the sphere? Okay, so how do we do that? Well, by the equations of motion, of course, the action should be stationary with respect to local variations of those radii. So let me look at a local variation of either the sphere radius or the ADS radius. There'll be one term just from the ordinary derivative of the Lagrangian. And then, with all the derivatives in the theory, after integrating by parts, I'll get covariant derivatives of stuff times delta L. But all these terms just vanish by the assumption that everything is covariantly constant. So in fact, the radii are determined by extremizing this term. Could there be a boundary contribution? So I'm looking at some local contribution. Yeah, we know it's local. It's a local. So I'm assume a solution of this form, and do a little local variation.
L is a constant or a function of
L? I'm assuming a solution exists where L's are constant. Yeah. I'm going to look at a local variation around that assumed solution. A local variation of L around that assumed solution, using the fact that it actually has to be stationary for such a variation. Okay, so we know then this whole local variation, all that ends up contributing is this ordinary derivative square root g times Lagrangian. This factor here is square root g. This is Lagrangian. So this factor should be stationary. So if you want to find the radii, just extremize this thing. I'm going to multiply by this constant, because if I multiply by the constant, the interpretation of the thing I'm extremizing will end up being the central charge of the conformal field theory dual to this ADS3. Okay, so how do you see that? How do you see this as the central charge? Let's write ADS3 in coordinates such that the boundary is a round two sphere. To work out the supergravity action is divergent because of the eta goes out to infinity, divergence in the eta integral. You work that out, you'll find that it scales linearly in some cutoff on that eta integral, this prefactor. What does this mean? Well, this scaling with the cutoff is just the scaling logarithmic divergence of the theory with the conformal anomaly. Changing eta is just scale transformation of the boundary. So if you think of this as a conformal field theory on S2, you have the usual conformal anomaly. That conformal anomaly, of course, tells us how the action scales under change of the cutoff and change of the conformal factor. And so just by equating this delta I with this delta I, you'll see that C ends up being the factor that we've written down here. Okay, so this is just sort of using analogy with conformal field theory, but it's with the boundary conformal field theory, but from this Brown-Hanoh point of view where we have a CFT for any ADS3 gravity theory, this is the result. So what's nice here is you can then get the central charge by an extremization principle. Write down this function, extremize it. Extremal value is the true central charge.
So L equals 3 is some constant in the band of the Lagrangian curve, L equals 3 in the box.
Yeah, that's right. So all the
constant and a divergence constant?
No. So I mean, L's are only appearing here. This is the only place where the L's appear. And so in the Lagrangian itself, the Lagrangian itself here has no L dependence.
That's the Lagrangian.
I'm saying that correctly. Lagrangian does depend on L, of course, because
curly L.
Yeah, curly.
The
yeah.
L
sorry, curly L's do depend on the little L's. That's right. Yeah.
So,
that's right. We don't know much about what the explicit form is, but whatever it is. Just plug into here and extremize that, I'll do the central charge. Okay, so we have the central charge given by that formula. What do we do with the central charge? Well, we can use it to compute black hole entropy of BTZ black holes in particular, and entropy in this general theory. So I'm going to use this relation between the BTZ black hole and thermal ABS. So the BTZ black hole, the Euclidean BTZ black hole, I want to compute the partition function of the Euclidean BTZ black hole, it is a solid torus. Okay, a solid torus, the boundary is this two-dimensional torus. Phi is the direction around the horizon, that's non-contractible. And Euclidean time t, split here, is contractible. On the other hand, if you look at thermal ADS is just ADS in global coordinates with imaginary time identified. That's so in that case. The imaginary time is non-contractible, and of course the angular direction of global ADS is contractible. These two geometries are related by modular transformation of this boundary torus. Okay, or I could do a more general SL2Z transformation and get a general family of black holes. Okay, so that's a useful relation. It's going to allow me to choose the partition function of the black hole. So let me start with a warm-up example. So in general, our BTZ black hole always has mass, angular momentum. In general, we carry, conserved electric charges due to whatever gauge fields in the theory. But just as a warm-up, let me only consider a black hole carrying mass and angular momentum, no other charges. Okay, so I want to compute the partition function. I want to compute the action of the BTZ black hole. So the easiest way to think about this is think about the partition function sort of in the usual CFT language. So I can write the action of the black hole to the Soro generators as follows. Okay, so here's one key part of the argument. Let's look at the thermal ADS. If I just consider the local part of the supergravity action, then thermal ADS is essentially the same thing as global ADS, but with a finite time duration. So I consider all instantons and so forth, those things could wind around the non-contractible time direction. That would make things more complicated. But if I'm only considering the local contributions, then I just have global ADS with some finite time duration. Now, global ADS has, it's the NS vacuum, so it has L0s equal to 0. And so that still holds in this case. So the action of thermal ADS is just given by putting L0 and L0 tilde into here, equating that with I. That's the action of thermal ADS. Then I do the modular transformation, gives me the action of the BTZ black hole. And the key thing is here, the action of the BTZ black hole is now entirely determined by the central charges. Okay? So this is for general BTZ black hole and the general higher derivative theory. All the higher derivative information is packaged into these central charges as determined by the C extremization principle. Okay, if I wanted to compute the entropy, I could transform partition function back into the degeneracies. Tau is related to the temperature and chemical potential like that. Let me, for right now, just do saddle point evaluation. If I do saddle point evaluation of this integral, then I get the Cardy formula. Okay, so now the Cardy formula is sort of standard formulas context. Why does it arise? Well, we're familiar with the CFT, but the route I went through here to get the Cardy formula is exactly the same route you do in CFT, so it's not surprising I get the same formula. But, well, so from the gravitational point of view, it's sort of interesting. So normally, in sort of two derivative gravity, this is just some suggestive rewriting of basically S equals A over 4. But now, we have all this higher derivative information in C and C tilde. This has a priori nothing to do with the area of the event horizon of the black hole. So in general, as I said, this is the entropy of the BTZ black hole in this arbitrary theory, and it encodes deviations from A over 4. And we all know in higher derivative theory, A over 4 couldn't be the general answer. I mean, what we mean by the metric is subject to field redefinition ambiguities and so forth. So like S equals A over 4 couldn't be a universal formula, but the Cardy formula is the thing that's universal. Okay, now we also have Wald's formula. So Wald is given an alternative formula for entropy and some general higher derivative gravity theory. It involves taking the functional derivative of Lagrangian with respect to the Riemann tensor, treating the Riemann tensor as an independent variable, and we integrate this over the horizon. And of course, it's natural to ask, how does this Wald's formula relate to what I just derived? So so we can see the relation. We use the fact that we derived the Cardy formula by this C extremization principle. So you can replace C by something involving derivatives of C because it's extremized. Use some dimensional analysis, trade derivatives and so forth. And so you can write C in this form as the derivative of Lagrangian with respect to Ricci tensor. And once you've done this, a little bit more work in processing gets you back to this form. So in fact, this Cardy formula for the entropy is exactly equivalent to Wald's entropy formula. In fact, the Cardy formula that I derived is actually slightly more general in the sense that this is actually true when you have independent C's and C tildes, whereas Wald's formula actually only applies for C equals C tilde. Okay, this result was actually, the fact that the Wald formula and Cardy formula are equivalent was actually known earlier by these people. It's saddle point, actually, in general. It's usually maximized by one of the L's and minimized by the other one. Okay, so that was the warm-up. Now, what are the complications? You consider additional charges. So in the case of the string theory examples, we want to have additional charges, additional potentials. That's important. So in our ADS3 theory, we'll have some additional gauge fields. And so I could write down Einstein-Maxwell kinetic term for these gauge fields. It could be other higher derivative kinetic terms as well. That's not important. But crucially, there's a Chern-Simons term for these gauge fields. CIGAs have been in the string theory examples are related to the intersection numbers of the Clausius. And if you have a Chern-Simons term in ADS3, you need to add a boundary term of this form in order to get a well-defined variational principle. And one way to sort of think about that is in the CFT is dual to these systems. The currents, the boundary currents, are chiral. And if you want to project out the other chirality, you need a boundary term to set that current to zero. And so there's some, I haven't written down coefficients, but there's some particular coefficient for this boundary term in order to get a chiral current. Okay, so we want to, according to this partition function, we want to turn on boundary conditions for these potentials. I can do that just with a flat connection. That's the simplest thing. Turn on flat connection. That flat connection will induce a charge due to the Chern-Simons term. They'll get charged. It's integrated over the boundary. And another important fact is the boundary term that I had to add here, there's a star there, so this means it depends on the metric. It depends on the metric. When I vary respect to the metric, to drive the stress tensor, I get a contribution. So this boundary term will shift stress tensor, shift the Virasoro generators in that form. It's slightly schematic here. And so basically, you redo the previous analysis. The only change that you would add on to the L0s, this term, and this is the action I had before, basically just add on this extra term, and it's a very simple modification. So adding these extra potentials is really not much of a complication. Well, it's because, going back to here, so everything's proportional on the thermal side, everything's proportional to tau. And then I did the modular transformation, everything became 1 over tau. So, I mean, when I said, I mean, in front of the action, but everything's proportional to the duration of Euclidean time. Why? Sorry, I'm not quite understanding.
So, in the thermal case, you want tau CI data.
Well, because the whole action is... integrated over the spatial boundary, that's right. Right, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I prefer to think... I prefer to think of everything in terms of just the shift in L0. And then you have some tau multiplying whatever the L0 thing is. So that there'll be cancellation if you do the other direction. Okay, so a little bit of relabeling. This tau is basically the same thing I was calling phi 0 before. These A's, the potentials, what I was calling phi I before. And if we look at that result now, specialized to extremal black holes, so it's at one of the temperatures of the left moves right moves to 0. Then you reproduce this result we wanted with CFT, provided the central charge from the extremization principle ends up being this factor here. So this factor is accounted for. All you have to do is show that the central charge is given by this, and then you'll reproduce the microscopic partition function. Okay, so the summary is here. Everything to do with the black hole entropy has been reduced down to computing the central charge C tilde. Okay, everything has been reduced down to that computation. Okay, so now concrete example of this. So again, the canonical example, M theory on CY3. Let me just start with the two derivative case, and then we'll talk about higher derivatives. So if you reduce M theory on Calabi-Yau 3, you get five-dimensional supergravity action, Einstein-Hilbert, kinetic terms of the moduli, Maxwell, Chern-Simons. This kind of theory has been very heavily studied in recent years. We basically know all about the solutions of these theories. And one writes the metric in the so-called terms of this base metric, DSB, this four-dimensional hyperkähler space and some vibration over it. And there are some nice equations that BPS equations reduced down to these nice equations. And it's pretty straightforward to solve these equations in terms of harmonic functions. And in this context, so you get four sets of harmonic functions. One set tells you how many M5 brains you're wrapping at four cycles. Second set tells you how many M2 brains you're wrapping at two cycles. Then you can have Kaluza-Klein monopoles, and you take this base metric to be some Gibbons Hawking space and some momentum. This is, again, Gibbons Hawking space. Or if you have some circle direction in this base metric, then you get momentum moving around a circle, get a harmonic function for that. So I'm not going to write down the explicit solutions, but there's just a cranky turn to write down any charges and solve those equations. Okay, now in terms of the 2A description, this would be some general D0, D2, D4, D6 momentum black hole. This is sort of the description that people normally give in the literature, but I'm thinking of this from the M-theory point of view. Okay, let me simplify life by not including these Kaluza-Klein monopoles or D6 brains from this 2A point of view. So work out that geometry, you'll find locally that you get ADS3 plus S2 cross CY3, the kind of example I wanted to consider. Okay, so we have the heavy charges and the light charges in this case. The heavy charges are the M5 brains. They tell you what the size of the ADS3 is, what the size of the S2 is, and what the fixed attractor values of the moduli are. It's given by integrating fluxes over two cycles. And then once you've chosen those heavy charges, it's a completely straightforward exercise to do the C-extremization principle. Just take that action, extremize it, work out the central charge, and you'll find this result for the central charge, something cubic, and the M5 brain charges. Okay, and note that this then is this leading term that I wanted for the central charge. What this leaves then is this correction term in the central charge. Okay. Okay. Well, we know essentially from the microscopic description that this is a theory with 4,0 superconformal symmetry. Wrapping M5 brains on the Clavijan that way gives that much supersymmetry. Now, if I wanted to go compute, so I just did the two derivative supergravity at this point. If I wanted to compute corrections of this thing, according to C extremization, I would need to know the entire Lagrangian. I have to extremize the entire Lagrangian to get C. And well, we certainly don't know the entire Lagrangian at all higher derivatives. And so this is not helpful at this point. So we need another approach to get the corrections. And let me sketch the logic here of this other approach. So this is where the anomalies are going to come in. So as I said, at this two derivative order, we showed that we have this ADS3 cross S2 cross X theory background at 4,0 symmetry. Now, whatever higher derivatives exist in the theory, I'm going to assume that those higher derivatives don't destroy this solution in the sense that we still have a solution of this form with the symmetry. It may rescale the ADSs, may rescale the S2, rescale the central charges, and so forth, but it doesn't remove that basic solution from the theory. Okay, I can't prove this because I don't know the action, but this is not true. It would be some breakdown of ADS-CFT because we have the microscopic side obeying those symmetries, and so we should have from both points of view. Okay, so now we can use this important observation of Harvey and Nozick and Moore, that in this theory, symmetries relate the central charges to M5 brain gravitational anomalies. Okay, and so that's why we can actually make exact statements about central charges in this theory. So how does that work? Well, if I have four supercharges, I have an SU2R symmetry, and the central charge is related to the SU2R symmetry anomaly. Furthermore, the difference, so that tells me the central charge is this side. The difference between the two central charges, C minus C tilde, is given by gravitational anomaly. If you have a CFT with unequal left and right central charges, there's an anomaly if you couple that to dynamical gravity. And so that's under control. And from the bulk point of view, both of these anomalies are given by a single R-squared Chern-Simons term, some single term in five dimensions which controls both of these anomalies. So the claim is that everything about the central charge is going to boil down to knowing a single term in the action, single higher derivative term in the action, which the topological string happens to include. But you don't need the whole thing. You just need this one term. Okay, so the reason why things are working, the topological string gets that right. All these individual r to the fourth terms, which could correct the central, could individually correct the central charge, but the complete set, consistent with the symmetries, will have to give zero. Otherwise, it would destroy this relation between the symmetries and the anomalies. That's the key part of the argument. Okay, so now let me go through more detail about how we actually compute these corrections. So everything flows from a single term in 11 dimensions, the single C3 wedge 8 form in the curvatures. And this term is known from years ago. The coefficient of this term is known from years ago by studying M5 brain anomaly cancellation. It plays part of the story is due to this term. So we want to reduce this thing down to five dimensions in the presence of our M5 brains wrapping four cycles. This is the four cycle we consider. Okay, so we reduce this term, second Chern class from some R squareds. A is some particular linear combination of the gauge field singled out by this particular choice of four cycle, R wedge R. Now we have M5 brains, we have magnetic sources for A, so A isn't really well defined here. The magnetic sources, so we should integrate by parts. Integrate by parts, A becomes F, P1, R large R becomes Lorentz Chern-Simons term. And Lorentz Chern-Simons term, of course, is not invariant under local Lorentz transformations. It shifts by a boundary term. So with your local Lorentz transformation of this form, the action will not be invariant, but we'll get some contribution on the ADS boundary. Yeah, the cubic term in C, that's right. So I've already, here's my logic. So I know you've thought a lot about this. My logic is I've already determined the cubic term in C here. That's taken care of. I want to compute corrections to it, okay? So
you're saying that's coming from the cubic,
the CBD term? No, this is coming, the way I'm getting this term is from the conformal anomaly, okay? Now getting it from, as you well know, getting this term from the Chern-Simons term, or where the Chern-Simons terms come from, things like that, is a very subtle proposition.
You can ignore
the CBD. That's right. I don't need to know.
Whatever it does, it has to end up being.
Yeah, it has to end up being this. That's right. Because I've computed the conformal anomaly. I know. I mean, I computed this explicitly. That's right. Computing the cubic term from the anomaly is quite tricky, surprisingly. Okay. Okay, so we have that variation in the action. There are two kinds of variations. One is if I look at local Lorentz transformations on the ADS boundary, then I'll pick up some change in the action. So trace theta d omega, theta is the transformation, d of spin connection. Now this should, I want to compare this to what I know about the transformation of theory of a given central charge. So if we have unequal left and right central charges, then we have an anomaly under precisely this kind of transformation, under local Lorentz transformations in the one plus one dimensional space. And just from anomalies, we know this is the variation of the partition function. So I compare here and here, that gives me the expression for the difference in these central charges. And now this is this linear term that I want. So this is, again, second Chern class dotted into this the M5 brain charges. Okay, so that was transformations in the ADS. I can do the same thing for transformations on the sphere, on the S2. Transformations on the S2 are R-symmetry transformations. So this hydrated term gives me a correction to the central charge of the supersymmetric side. Again, it's just a correction. I'm just looking at the variation due to this one hydrated term. So this is a correction. I have to add that correction to the lowest order result. If I add this lowest order result, I get the exact central charges. So here's my lowest order term, and I'm adding corrections of these two equations here, so I can solve for C and C tilde and get these results. And these are really exact formulas for the central charge because it's been related to anomalies. They're coming from Chern-Simons terms. There aren't any other terms I can write down which would further correct these things. I mean, there's not arbitrary number of Chern-Simons terms to consider. This is really the whole story. If there were additional corrections, it would destroy the consistency of the M5 brain, essentially. It would destroy the anomaly cancellation. Okay, so we know the exact central charges, and I told you earlier that to get the entropy, we just need to know the central charges. So now, to this approximation, we have the entropy. And so it's like an application, and one application is the heterotic string. I'm trying to get the supergravity derivation of the heterotic string spectrum. So if we take our Calabi-Yau K3 cross T2, let's have some additional circle around. This is dual to the heterotic string on T6. You can take an M5 brain, wrap that W times on K3 cross S1. This is dual to the heterotic string, wrap W times on the circle. So what are the central charges? Well, use this formula for K3. Left-moving central charge is 12 times the wrapping number. Right-hand side, 24 times the wrapping number. What are these central charges? Well, these are precisely the central charges of the transverse matter on the heterotic string world sheet. So on the supersymmetric side, 8 bosons, 8 fermions, that's C equals 12. Bosonic side, 26 bosons, 24 transverse bosons, equal to 24. So we have the central charge of both chiralities of the heterotic string. And so we can use Cardy's formula now, which again is just the saddle point approximation of the entropy, but let me just stick with that. And then we get these entropy of these Dabbelkar-Harvey states, given here. This was first observed by Keith Dabbelkar. And then from the work of people in this room, and Boris and Greg and all, we know that if we go further and carry out those integrals over the potentials as Laplace transform, do we account for all the power law corrections to the entropy. Okay, but now the new part here is that this works just as well if you put momentum in the supersymmetric side, which would break supersymmetry. So one can just as well look at a non-BPS states of the heterotic string, and in the saddle point approximation, you get this entropy from a black hole, which of course matches the microscopic degeneracy. And so, at first, you might be rather. Yeah, actually hasn't been studied. That's right. Actually has not been studied explicitly. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's not. I'm not saying it's a hard thing, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is just near extreme.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's near extreme. It's far from extreme in the ADS sense, but then right, to get an ADS geometry, the black hole has to be sufficiently near extreme all from the asymptotically flat sense. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a right. At first you might say this is very surprising. I'm giving all these corrections to a non-extreme black hole, but it's really not so surprising because we know, basically, in any case where we understand really quantitatively black hole entropy, we can always generalize that to non-extremal situations. And it's really due to the fact that we're using an ADS3 geometry. When you go into non-extremal, the BTZ black hole, that BTZ black hole non-extremal, still locally ADS3, it's not really that big a step to get non-extremal. So one point of view, it's surprising. Other point of view, it's not surprising. But I think this shows that the agreements here are not really due to supersymmetry. It's not because we're computing an index or something like that. I'm arguing it's due to anomalies and so forth. Yes.
In Laplace A, for example, there are no Hausdorff corrections in four dimensions. So you wouldn't expect to get any correction to the two-level entropy.
So what theory are you talking about?
I'm talking about having the effects in Laplace A.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a question. Yeah, I'll have a few comments on that towards the end.
There are no Hausdorff corrections in the four-level direction.
No, unfortunately, in that n equals 8 case, there isn't a Chern-Simons term of the form I need, so there are no gravitational anomalies of the type I considered.
But then there's the density of the microscopic counting.
Well, I think there's not a computation that gives the microscopic counting. I don't know of a sharp discrepancy in the sense that I don't know. You're right, microscopically, that's right. I don't.
It should be said that there are zero index.
Well, the absolute number of states. I mean, this is non-supersymmetric. So, yeah. No, and I don't think there's a discrepancy because in that type 2 case, there isn't any geometry. Nobody's exhibited a stabilized geometry, which would be dual to that system. So I don't have any geometry to apply these arguments to. Remember, I'm sort of assuming that there is a stabilized geometry. I think it's quite likely there is no stabilized geometry. Well, this is a small black hole. This is a small black hole. Yeah.
Because, for example, I think we had a discrepancy with small black holes in N equals 2 for the epic of 2 model. So I'm wondering how your argument seems, you don't seem to be bothered by the fact that you're working at small finite large topological. So, since you're reproducing the kind of computation
we did. Well, I'd like to look. I know you guys looked at a lot of examples. I haven't looked at all these examples. I'd like to look at this.
Well,
the CFT.
We advertised, but we did find one example.
Yeah.
With a
sharp discrepancy. Okay.
Yeah, and then people blame it on the fact that
yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, that doesn't seem to bother you.
Well, importantly using here is enough symmetry in my theory to relate everything back to anomalies. Now, you're talking about some other theory. We have
to
ask.
It's another flaw, yeah. It's mm-hmm. just taking that K3 times Q2 and dividing it by V2.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so should work. I mean, then I don't, yeah. But you're finding discrepancy at the, not at the saddle point part, but at the subleading term?
Well, no, that's where it depends on whether you're talking about the second helicity super trace or the absolute power, absolute degeneracy. With one of the discrepancy at the leading the other is in the logarithm.
Okay, well, I'd be very interested to see why we have this example where it especially disagrees with the leading order. I personally don't see any escape from this result. Okay. All right, now let me shift gears slightly towards the end of the talk here. I'm now going to discuss just some general issues of holography in the presence of gravitational anomalies, in the presence of gravitational Simons terms. So this is now not the direct relation to string theory here, it's sort of being pushed aside. I just want to look at general theories. So let me look at some theory of gravity with Megalic cosmological constant, giving ADS, this action. Now, in this kind of theory, the metric admits this Fefferman-Graham expansion. That's what it means for a metric to be asymptotic to ADS. So some, this is the metric on the conformal metric on the boundary, and then there's some power series expansion in e to the 2 eta. Now, in a theory like this, you define the boundary stress tensor as the on-shell variation of the action with respect to the conformal boundary metric. So vary the on-shell action, and that term in front there is your angular momentum tensor. I'm now going to talk about three dimensions. This is the case I'm interested in. Three dimensions, you can then get an explicit formula for the stress tensor in terms of the subleading parts of the expansion of the metric. Here it is. This indices are being raised and lowered with respect to the G0 metric. And an action like this, the stress tensor is conserved. That follows from diffeomorphism invariants. Has a non-zero trace. It's a conformal anomaly for these people. And the central charge that you derive in this way is just this Brown Hinault central charge. And you always get C equals C tilde in this theory. There is equal left and right central charges. So let's ask about adding the one non-diffeomorphism invariant term that we could add without completely destroying the consistency of the theory. That's a gravitational Simons term. The theories are considered long ago by Desert, Jakub, and Templeton. So I think about the trade the Christoffel symbol for one forms, and so then I have this is a three form integrating this over ADS 3, arbitrary component beta. Look at the transformation of this under diffeomorphism. Well, this term varies by a boundary term of this form, and that's the anomaly in general coordinate transformations. Or we could write down a Chern-Simons term like this in terms of the spin connection. In that case, we would preserve the general coordinate invariance with violated local Lorentz transformations. You can shift back and forth. These two anomalies are equivalent. That's been known for a long time. So since we now have a non-diffeomorphism invariant action, the stress tensor is non-conserved, and one can work out an explicit, which would be a beta multiplying this from up there. That's the explicit formula for the non-conservation of the stress tensor. And again, we know that think about this from CFT point of view, that anomaly is related to C minus C tilde. And so you can relate the coefficient beta in front of the Chern-Simons term to the shifts in the central charges. And we get a shift of a plus sign on one side, a minus sign on the other side, simply because this extra term we added in is odd under parity. So equal shifts on the opposite side of the left. Okay, so then we can work out the general stress tensor for these theories. So the stress tensor will be some lowest order term. Here's the extra contribution from this Chern-Simons term. And there's some remaining semi-complicated term here, which depends on the conformal metric on the boundary, but nothing else. So this is like some sort of background constant, which isn't particularly illuminating. Anyway, so we can work out this general stress tensor.
Wait, the stress tensor in CFT is conserved?
Is not conserved because, so what I'm trying to do is describe holography. ADS theories, which would be dual to CFTs, where C is not equal to C tilde. And so if C is not equal to C tilde, then the stress tensor is not conserved. And you cannot couple the theory to dynamical gravity. Yeah, so I want to give the bulk version of that statement. Okay, so it's kind of fun to apply this thing to the standard solutions, BPZ solutions, and see what this higher derivative term does to the solutions. Well, that the equations of motion following from that Chern-Simons term vanish anytime you have local ADS3 geometry. So the BTZ solution is locally ADS3, therefore, if I take the ordinary BTZ solution labeled by some parameters little m, little j, that geometry is uncorrected. No, it's like curvature is covariantly constant. If the curvature is covariantly constant, then it's a contribution. Okay, but there was a shift. So the geometry is uncorrected, but the stress tensor was corrected. So there's a shift then in the physical mass and angular momentum. There's this sort of mixing between the M and J parameters of this form. So for example, one particular case of a BTZ solution is just global ADS. So if you take BTZ with a negative mass and no angular momentum, that's just global ADS3. So there's no shift in the mass of global ADS3, it still has this form, but there's now a non-zero angular momentum for this term. So global ADS3 with that term is an angular momentum 4 pi beta. What does that mean? Well, from the CFD point of view, it's simple. This is C minus C tilde of 24. This is just the mismatch between the zero-point energies of the left movers and the right movers. So it's like some Casimir momentum going along the boundary, which from the black hole point of view is angular momentum. Okay, then everything I said about driving the Cardy formula follows in this theory. So entropy of these BTZ black holes is given by Cardy formula, again, with these weights related to the mass and angular momentum. And just for amusement, there's one kind of fun example we can look at. So I have these formulas for the central charge. Suppose I take beta such that C tilde becomes zero. So choose beta to be C naught over 48 pi. Then C tilde is zero, here's C. So this term vanishes, I only have this term. But I can look at an extremal black hole in this theory. An extremal black hole would have ML minus J equals zero. In other words, H left equals zero, so then both terms vanish. But the fact that I have not can do this with a non-zero M and L, M and J, means that I can have a black hole with a non-zero horizon area, but vanishing entropy. Okay, I don't know what this is good for, but it's kind of interesting. Okay, to my conclusions. Conclusions are, well, two conclusions. One is that symmetries and anomalies are extremely powerful in determining black hole entropy, including corrections. Okay, but I've only gone so far, so they're very powerful when it comes to these local corrections, local terms in the supergravity action. But we definitely need a much better understanding of non-perturbative effects, instantons and so forth, which are related to the exponentially small terms in the entropy. I haven't yet had anything to say about such things. And, well, the puzzle in this whole subject is, if you look at the case which should have been the simplest, turns out to be the most confusing. Instead of talking about heterotic strings, suppose I just talked about type 2 strings. Just type 2 string, fundamental type 2 string on a circle, a torus. That certainly has a microscopic degeneracy, which is easily computed. And can we work out the black hole entropy dual to that situation? And so far the answer is no. And the reason why, I think, remains to be understood. From this point of view, I can say two things. One is that the gravitational anomaly in the system vanishes. So there's definitely something very different that happens from my point of view for this system. There isn't a gravitational anomaly, so I don't get any information from there. And sometimes the literature, one reads the same as the maybe if you take R to the fourth corrections and so forth. Well, so what's known in this theory is if you just take the R squared corrections, there isn't a stabilized black hole geometry. So, but there is this microscopic degeneracy, so people say maybe if you add in the R to the fourth terms and so on, that will give a stabilized geometry. Now, if there are corrections that stabilize the geometry, they should be alpha prime corrections in this type 2 picture. But one can actually work out the exact space-time central charge, including all alpha prime corrections, by doing string theory in ADS3 with NS background. And you can get a stabilized geometry if you take that, well, either a heterotic string or type 2 string, add in some NS5 arrays, includes Klein monopoles. That gives you a finite-sized geometry. And then you can ask, okay, what if I set the number of NS5 arrays includes Klein monopoles to zero, just leaving the fundamental string charge? Am I left with some residual central charge? Well, in the case of the heterotic case, so you get some C0s that are given by this combination of the five arrays includes Kleins, you set that to zero, and you're left with this nice residual 12 and 24, just what you want for the central charge in the heterotic world sheet. In type 2, however, the exact alpha prime analysis gives no corrections. So you set because of zero, you get zero central charge. So I'm not quite sure what to read from this. My interpretation is there may just be no stabilized geometry dual to these type 2 strings. So if there is a stabilized geometry, it's a very different form than than in a heterotic case, so something dramatically has to change. But I think this is, in many ways, the most interesting question in this subject. Okay, that's it.
Could you explain again maybe why the, if you want only to get the 1 over phi 0 terms, it's sufficient to keep only the local conditions?
Right. Yeah, okay, so remember phi 0 is another name for tau. And 1 over phi 0 is the dependence on the black hole side, so that's like 1 over tau. And I was getting the black hole by modular transformation. So before the modular transformation, I just want things proportional to tau. And so in that geometry, before the modular transformation, this is just thermal ADS. And tau is essentially the duration of Euclidean time. So terms proportional to tau are extensive. So all the extensive terms are given by the local part of the Lagrangian. And everything else is, you know, stuff winding around tau, the non-local stuff. So to get tau dependence, I just need the extensive part of the action, just all the local part of the Lagrangian. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, that's right. I have to suppress anything that can wind around. I have to suppress that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's right. So there are two easy part of the story to understand from this point of view is that local stuff, phi zero small, instantons, winding, some of the geometry, that's probably not determined by these general principles of anomalies and symmetries.
Yeah.